It's Light the Tower, your daily look around the world of sports with Hall of Fame broadcaster and voice of the Texas Longhorns, Craig Way.
Say goodnight to this one!
And Horns 24-7 insider, Jeff Howe. On your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
A beautiful Monday morning to you. How you doing post-holiday? Getting ready for regular holiday. The holiday season, that is. With that, we welcome you to Light the Tower here on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We are live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. My name is Craig Way. Glad to have you with us. Always happy to be with you every day, Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to noon. Always happy to be joined by my co-host, the pride of Northwest Williamson County, a proud graduate of Florence High School.
You're damn right.
And former all-district offensive lineman, honorable mention from the Florence Buffaloes, where they knew him as Highway 79. You know him best for his outstanding work at Horns 24/7. That's Jeff Howe. Good morning to you.
It's a beautiful day, unless you're flying that OU flag in your front yard.
That might be a little bit difficult.
Like Black Sunday, Black Monday. I don't know what we're going with here.
But something like that.
It's rough.
Joining us, as always, our producer, our man behind the glass, the purveyor of all good things, Flex ATX. He's the major domo of said site as well. Jonathan, John Donaldson, J. Donaldson. You know him as Snoop Daniel. How are you?
Great.
You wrapped up warm today. You saw that it was 40 degrees outside this morning.
I did. I got on my Lord Sith Darth Vader Christmas sweater because it's after Thanksgiving.
Okay,
so
that's it.
Christmas time.
Yeah. You hitting up in them Cyber Monday deals, Snoop?
You better believe it.
What you got in your crosshairs?
Oh, flexatx.com, shop.flexatx.com.
25% off, right?
That's right. Use the promo code
FLEX25. FLEX25. But you can do that on the site overall for Horn Gear. Yes,
HornFM.com.
So be sure to check that out here on this Cyber. I got a little Cyber also, Monday for you coming up in Inconceivable.
Yeah.
So just for you.
Okay.
Real quick, also Cyber Monday, get over Horns 24/7. 75% off an annual sub at Horns 24/7 right now.
Really?
Yep. Got the Cyber Monday promotion going on.
That's pretty good. Man, there's a lot happening on Cyber Monday.
And by the way, it does give you access to the VIP sub, the Full Tilt experience, gives you access to all the message boards in the 24/7 Sports Network. So if you want to go pay close attention and get a blow-by-blow account of the meltdown in Norman, go head over to OU Insider. You can do that with your subscription to 24/7.
There almost sounds like there's a little glee in your voice there.
I'll say this. I know we'll get to it, but I'll just say this to start off the Lincoln Riley to USC conversation. There, we kind of talked about this with TCU, Craig, when the whole Gary Patterson thing went down. There's a generation of Oklahoma fans that, and I don't mean a generation because we're going on a quarter century since Bob
Stoops
took that
job. Abraham Lincoln technology or a phraseology, a score.
There's about a generation now of OU fans that have no recollection of John Blake or Gary Gibbs or how the Barry Switzer era ended.
Howard Schnellenberger.
There was that 1 year.
5-5-1.
He said like something about the tradition stops and starts with me. He gave one of those kind of speeches.
That's the first time I ever heard the word nation mentioned with a collegiate Sooner Nation. It's the first time I ever heard that was back in 1995.
Sooner Nation has lasted much longer, that terminology, than Howard Schnellenberger's tenure as head coach. But, anytime Oklahoma loses a game or comes close to losing a game, you get the people that, should Lincoln Riley be fired? But, that Oklahoma fan base has gotten a reputation of, they really don't appreciate, they don't care about conference championships. They don't care about winning the conference. They're just concerned about what happens in a playoff and beyond. It should be a lesson to you. Texas fans have had to learn this. Certainly USC fans have had to deal with this. Florida's a fan base that's had to deal with this.
Mm-hmm.
Michigan, I can go on and on. This should be a reminder not to take the really good times for granted.
Absolutely.
Can you feel like you left some meat on the bone and expectations were not fulfilled? Absolutely. Certainly. Even in the good years under Mac, Craig, Texas sat here with some 11-2 teams where you felt like, yeah, good season, but you probably could have gotten a little more out of that. There's a little more to get out of it. But overall, all the Oklahoma fans said, forget these conference championships. If you don't handle this right, if your administration doesn't handle this right, you'll be begging to go back to a time where winning 11 games and winning the conference championship felt almost like a given.
Yeah. It may be difficult for, and like you say, a generation of Longhorn fans to fathom, but there were 9 consecutive seasons of 10 or more wins in this town. 9 consecutive seasons of 10 or more. And it seems like a long time ago, obviously. And dynamics have changed. We know that. A lot has changed about this. I think Joel Klatt had tweeted out last night that he said USC got a mammoth hire, but he said, but Oklahoma's bigger than one man and they'll be fine and all that. It's true, but your point is well made, getting the right guy to help continue to guide it, because say what you will about Lincoln Riley, and that includes the loss last Saturday night to Oklahoma State and missing out on playing for the conference title for the first time in 7 years. Say what you will about all that, he did a heck of a job there, and now he moves on to USC, and where folks are going to be very excited. We're going to talk a little more about this. Here's what we're going to do this morning. We do have a Whataburger top five performances of the weekend, but we're going to do it next hour, because normally on Mondays we have during the football season, we have a Steve Sarkisian press conference. We do not. Obviously, the season is over, and they're on the recruiting trail. So no Sark press. So that's why we're in studio. So we're back to being in on Mondays here from 10 to noon. So we're going to have our Whataburger top five early in the 11 o'clock hour. So we are going to do that. We do have a Longhorn notebook coming up at the bottom of the hour from Jeff. We do have Inconceivable coming up later this hour. So we have that. We also obviously have a Longhorn notebook next hour as well. There's NFL to get to. The breaking news, Mike McCarthy's not going to coach this week. COVID. If the Supreme Lending Pick'em challenge has the Cowboys involved, it's something for Snoop to consider. How'd you guys do, by the way, over the weekend?
I've got to look at my phone, Snoop. I don't remember what I texted you.
I don't remember either. And I was going to ask this.
Usually when you guys say that, it's not that good.
Yeah.
Usually when you say, I have to check.
But also, I didn't gamble one penny this holiday.
Really?
Not one.
Good on you.
I know.
So check and see how you did on your pick.
Does Mike McCarthy have the Omicron version?
The Omicron. Omicron. Version of, I don't know. I don't know if he has the Omicron version of the COVID.
I was looking. I was worried.
So I went 1-1 because Snoop, I don't know if you sent these in, but I did. Okay, I said give me Ohio State and Oklahoma State.
Look at you, Pickett, going with the Cowboys. You took the two OSUs and one of them panned out.
I took.
Good thing you didn't take the other OSU since Oregon State lost to Oregon in the Civil War.
I took the Jim Knowles defense over Lincoln Riley offense. I said it. Everybody heard me say it going into the Bedlam game. That's your Broyles Award winner, Jim Knowles, for what he's done with that Oklahoma State defense.
So our good friend David Garrett from Oklahoma, who was helping us out on the football broadcast on Friday, came down just to do stats for me, and Ben was traveling on the road, and of course, he's my road engineer for Longhorn basketball. He and his wife, Regina, their very good friend, Jim Knowles' girlfriend.
Oh, yeah, I think I remember you telling me something about that. Yeah.
Jim Knowles' girlfriend, in fact.
I went 0-3.
Who did you take?
I took the Cowboys, I took the Rams, and I took the Colts.
All right, well, I told you were crazy to pick the Rams. Mm. Crazy to pick the Rams against the Packers. Colts, I would have gone.
It's a close game.
I could say. And I definitely would have said go Cowboys. I would have thought they would have handled their business against the Rams. Oh, so the two of you went a combined 1-4.
Yeah, not a good weekend.
Okay, all right.
Not a good weekend on the
picking. And like Nick Saban says, when teams are on the downskid, they're trying harder.
Okay. I'm glad you listened to that, Snoop.
See, I did. I really did. I thought it was hit home for me.
We should be proud of ourselves, Craig, because we have forced Snoop to expand his sports horizons.
Somehow, it is worked out. So that's a good thing. So anyway, we'll get to the high school stuff coming up in the second hour of the program. But let's jump in with college football because there is a lot to unpack here. There is that crazy Alabama-Auburn 4 overtime game. I was listening to it as crawling is a better term, up I-35 after the women's basketball game. Took me 5 hours and 20 minutes to get to the Metroplex.
Brutal.
You know, bad enough, dark and rain and all that. But then, you know, the whole thing about people getting the left lane, and it's not going 50. It's doing 32 miles an hour in the left lane.
That's OU weekend levels of traffic.
It is. And where the big LED sign says, Waco, 60, it says 18 miles, 66 minutes to get through that. It took me an hour and a half to get from Troy to Hillsboro.
Good Lord.
An hour and a half. So I had plenty of time to listen to a lot of games, and was listening to that. So there's obviously there's Alabama-Auburn. They felt bad for Mack Brown with the way that the ceiling just fell in,
man,
on the Tar Heels Friday night in that game against NC State. I was flipping between that and the Rouse Liberty Hill telecast that Roger Wallace and Keith Moreland were doing on KBVO, and it was hard to believe that the way that thing ended. Then you had, of course, Bedlam on Saturday night, Michigan, Ohio State during the day. I mean, there was a lot.
You think that Friday night game, since it was a game against NC State that came down to a special teams gaffe, Mac just started having flashbacks immediately?
I thought about that of 99, yeah. The block punt. Because they already blocked the punt. They blocked the punt to start the game to get a touchdown, NC State did. They blocked the punt in the first couple of minutes of the game score. Yeah, so then of course, the onside kick that followed, the receiver getting behind the defensive back. For those who didn't know, North Carolina was up 9-9 with 2:12 to go and gave up two touchdowns in 26 seconds. And lost 34-30.
Well, that NC State loss in 99 for Mac is like herpes. It clears up, but it never really goes away.
Golly. A national championship doesn't wipe that off?
No, it still sticks with you a little bit.
Okay.
It's got to always just hang in there, just like nerds, waiting to gnaw at you.
To be referred to. All right, so there was that. And then, of course, on Saturday, Michigan beating Ohio State. So now,
man, let me give Jim Harbaugh some props on that, because Chad asked me, we had the pregame show down on Bevo Boulevard on Friday, and he asked me, he's like, "Do you trust Michigan to keep it close with Ohio State?" I said, "No." I said, "Jim Harbaugh's given me nothing to go on. Like, I'll believe it when I see it." And man, you talk about what it really reminded me of, Craig. It really reminded me of Max last year at Texas, the way Texas won the Oklahoma game. Like, you can look at that score and say, well, it was not as close as the score indicated it would be. Like, Michigan just straight up punked Ohio State. They hit Ohio State, punched them right in the mouth, and never stopped all day. That was a line of scrimmage bludgeoning Michigan handed Ohio State on Saturday.
Yeah, in the snow. So then Saturday night, adding to the mystery and to the intrigue, P.J. Fleck in Minnesota knocks off a Wisconsin team that had won 7 in a row.
Yeah, Minnesota's might be like the quietest 8-win team in the country.
I start saying, say what you will about, you know, people roll their eyes about the whole row the boat thing. That dude can coach, and they've done pretty well.
They win a bowl game, they get to 9. Like, damn, they had 9 wins this season, and nobody knew it.
Yeah. So there's that. So now it's Iowa and Michigan in the Big Ten championship. And so with the rest of the college football playoff scene, I know folks feel that the door is wide open for Oklahoma State. It's open. I don't know how wide open it is, because I'm really curious to see what the committee does tomorrow with Notre Dame.
Yeah.
I mean, are they still going to be ahead of Oklahoma State? Will they? Because the committee wasn't in love with Oklahoma. You know,
true. I do think, though,
that it'll be enough to lift them past a Notre Dame team that beat down Stanford.
Well, typically we've seen these situations in the Big 12 kind of work themselves out, right? Like, I think if you look at Oklahoma State and you look at their body of work, and you'll see they've got They would have had two wins over Baylor at that point.
Mm-hmm.
They would have a win over Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
Was Texas ranked in the top 25 at the time they beat Texas? I think so, weren't they? I don't know if the committee looks at stuff like that, like
right.
who you where teams were ranked
at
when
the
you,
time
beat
you beat
them,
them
kind
right.
of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you look at Oklahoma State's body work, I mean, look, I'd give them credit, even though Boise's 7-5. Give them credit for going to Boise,
yeah.
in a non-conference game and winning that game. So I tend to think the body of work will work in Oklahoma State's favor at the end of the day. If
it
they
might
win
be.
On Saturday,
Boise's kind of falling off. They didn't even make the
right,
Mountain
but
West
still
title,
good. Just going yes. out there, I think they should get credit because nobody wants to go out there and play them.
Right.
I think they should get credit for at least making the trip and winning the game.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That's true. And then you're comparing the one loss. The one loss, Oklahoma State's one loss, was at Iowa State at the time when
at
they were
home
good.
Iowa State, yep.
An Iowa State team that's now 7-5.
But you need to put that in perspective, too.
At the time.
Go look at Brock Purdy's record. And I don't know if the committee gets this deep into it. But, like, go look at how good Iowa State has been with Brock Purdy as their quarterback in conference home games. Damn near unbeatable.
I would hope they do a deep dive. I'd hope you uncover
hope
all
so.
Of that stuff. And then you compare that against Notre Dame's one loss. It was a home loss, but it was to a team that's going to be in the playoff if they handle their business, which is not a guarantee.
If you're a Cincinnati fan, you hope the committee likes Notre Dame a lot more than they like Oklahoma State because that's going to help you at the end of the day.
Yeah. Well, I think now because of the Ohio State loss and because what's expected to happen in the SEC championship with Georgia and Alabama – if Cincinnati beats Houston, they're in.
Yeah.
It's no longer waiting on the others to fall by the wayside. They are now in control of their destiny. If they beat Houston, which would be a good win,
I'm like 98% of the way with you there, Craig. That's one of those.
What would take you off of that?
Even when it crosses the finish line. I still don't know that I'm going to be 100% certain until those. I would have an uneasy feeling about Cincinnati until those selections came out.
Would it be? Let me throw a scenario and see if this is what you're thinking about. Say Alabama beats Georgia in the SEC championship.
Yeah,
Alabama beats Georgia.
Georgia's in.
All right. Yeah. So Alabama beats Georgia. Notre Dame and Oklahoma State both win. Does Cincinnati get nudged aside at that point?
And Michigan wins? Michigan beats Iowa?
And Michigan beats Iowa.
Then, yeah, I think Cincinnati's out.
Okay. I could see that happening.
Because you're taking the two SEC teams at that point.
Yeah.
You're not leaving it.
But
especially
see,
with Michigan's win over Ohio State, you're not leaving a Big Ten champion
it
out.
Was said, it was said, but I think folks were looking at the circumstances differently back a couple of weeks ago, that no two-loss SEC team should go ahead of an undefeated Cincinnati because at that point, then the system is a joke.
No. I'm agreeing with you on that. I'm saying if Alabama loses, then they're out of the conversation. But if you've got a one-loss Alabama
right.
and a one-loss Georgia,
they're both going to go ahead.
Yeah.
So
and then the debate comes down to it's really three teams at that point. It's Notre Dame, it's Oklahoma State, and it's Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel like the committee would do it at that point.
And I think at that point it comes down to Oklahoma State against Cincinnati because Cincinnati would have scoreboard on Notre Dame.
They would, Craig, but I just, man, I.
Who has Notre Dame beaten in the month of November?
That's what I said. I was just looking at
Stanford.
Notre Dame's schedule. Notre Dame's beaten one ranked team this year.
Yeah.
Wisconsin.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's the list. That's a list of teams Notre Dame has beaten. That's not a great Notre Dame resume, but
man.
I think the debate really comes down to, and honestly, I mean, if the committee does do a deep dive, they would look at Notre Dame's resume and say, okay, Cincinnati beat Notre Dame, but really, how good is Notre Dame?
Yeah, exactly. Somebody on the Specs text line at 337-3776, where we always welcome your questions, your input. Does Baylor have any chance with the we've beaten everyone on our schedule argument if they win the Big 12? The problem is they didn't beat everybody on their schedule. They didn't win the earlier game against Oklahoma State, and they certainly didn't beat TCU.
Well,
that's the crippler. Losing
right.
to TCU will keep Baylor, even if they win the Big 12, from getting in the playoff, barring chaos, complete chaos. And that's what, if you're a Baylor fan, yeah, you would want chaos to happen.
Because then a two-loss, boy, now you're talking about this
a two-loss
kind of
Alabama gets a two-loss Baylor.
Just gives me tired head. Now you've got, like if Cincinnati loses,
yeah.
I mean, if Cincinnati loses the American Championship game, they're out of the conversation
they're
at
out.
That point.
I got to believe they're out.
And then if you're a Baylor fan, then you're looking, okay, does Iowa beat Michigan in the Big Ten Championship game? You feel like at that point it probably doesn't matter what happens in the SEC Championship game. You feel like both of those teams are in.
Yeah.
Now you're talking about, okay, and now you're talking about like a two-loss Oregon.
A two-loss Ohio State.
Ohio State's back in the conversation at that point. So, yeah, I mean, if you're a Baylor fan,
you want to win the game and go to the Sugar Bowl.
And then just hope that just all hell breaks loose Saturday afternoon, Saturday night.
Yeah. But I think the most realistic thought is win the Big 12 championship and get to you go to a New Year's Six Bowl. You'll either go to the Sugar Bowl, or if Oklahoma State were to get left out, then they would go to the Fiesta Bowl probably in that case. I don't know. Or vice versa. One would go Fiesta, one would go. You're still going to a New Year's
Six. If Baylor wins the Big 12, I think it's
that pretty would much seed them to the Sugar.
Pretty much assume, yeah. Pretty much locks them into the Sugar Bowl.
Yeah. So, you know, I that's probably the most realistic scenario. But again, we've seen chaotic things happen. So we'll see where it goes from there. All right. Coming up, we're going to have our Longhorn notebook. We haven't even really gotten that much into the Lincoln Riley thing.
We'll do that next because there's some layers. There's a Texas spin on it. I'm going to put on it.
Good.
And honestly, Craig, we'll probably have to tomorrow get to unpacking the K-State game and the end of the season and all of that fun stuff. We'll do that tomorrow.
Okay. All right. We'll continue with Light the Tower here on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9 AM 1260. We are live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Everyone knows the Pluckers.
This is Light the Tower on the Horn. Craig Wayne and Jeff Howe. Snoop Daniel alongside. And a lot to continue to get to. And, you know, so there it is. We'll continue to go down the road and talk in college football and a lot of the moon, so we'll do that. All right. Somebody says, if ever there was a time for Texas to take over the Big 12, it would be next year.
Let's just tap the brakes on that a little bit. We are still talking about a football team coming off of a 5-7 season. So it's just,
yep. Toward that end, somebody said, are there enough 6-win teams to fill all the bowl slots? The answer is yes.
More than enough.
Yeah.
There'll be some 6-win teams, at least one that doesn't get to a bowl.
Yeah. Yeah. There were teams that you thought would probably lose their seventh game, LSU to A&M, didn't happen. North Texas at home, not only beating UTSA, handing UTSA their first loss, they beat them pretty soundly.
Mm-hmm.
Beat them 45-23. Tulsa spotted SMU a 17-0 lead and came back to beat them to get bowl eligible.
Speaking of coaches leaving.
There were several 5-win teams that got to the six. West Virginia handled it, but that was expected, that went and beat Kansas. Memphis handled its business against Tulane. So there were several that did. So, yes, there are enough. There will not be a 5-7 team in a bowl game this year. There'll be teams that finish 6-7 because there'll be some 6-6 teams that lose their bowl game, but there will not be a 5-7 team going to a bowl game. All right, time now for the notebook.
Jeff Howe's Longhorn Notebook.
I'm going to elongate this notebook a little bit because I do want to talk about the Texas K-State game a little bit, and we'll get to the Lincoln Riley stuff because, again, I've got some Texas-related layers to that, but let's go ahead and just talk about the Texas K-State game. It's a 22-17 win for the Longhorns. They finished 5-7, and there's probably not a really big difference between 5-7 and 4-8. Although I will get my buddy Chris Dukes, who does a really good job helping cover preps at the Statesman. He texted me and said, "Look, he's like, you might not think there's a big difference between 5-7 and 4-8." And he's like, "But at least Texas has been 5-7 before." He's like, "An 8-loss season is John Blake stuff, so at least Texas avoided that."
They haven't had an 8-loss season since 1956, yep. And everybody were talking about the longest losing streak since then. They had a 5-7 under Mac Brown. They had 2 5-7s and 1 6-7 under Charlie Strong. It has happened, the 5-7s, unfortunately. Yep. But it hadn't been, and of course they had a 4-7 under John Makovic in his last year, 1997. So they haven't had a 4-win season since 97, nor have they had more than 7 losses since 56. So, okay, no reason to celebrate or anything. But the number one reason why your friend also, Chris Dukes, points this out, they snap a losing streak and finish on an up note.
Yeah, and, you know, in the big picture, does it matter a lot to Texas fans? Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. But at least, you know, you've got some seniors, you know, especially your super seniors that you know are not coming back. You know, Tope Amades, the Derek Kerstetters, the Cade Brewers of the world. A lot of guys that have given a lot to this program mm-hmm. and to this university. And I don't mean that to sound like coach speak, but – you know, Craig, one of my favorite – it is my favorite media availability of the year is usually the one before senior day. And I usually leave that availability thinking, man, this guy who we haven't talked to all year, and he's getting to do the media deal because he's a senior and this is his last home game, stories that I wish could have been told earlier in the year. You had a chance to really, you know, dive into it. Like Tope Amade talking about the perspective he gained – through losing his mom to cancer and the fact that he's working on his second master's degree, or, you know, Derek Kerstetter talking about, you know, reminding us of his perseverance. And we've told the Derek Kerstetter story, but his perseverance to get back from that gruesome leg injury, remembering like Sam Ellinger holding his leg as still as possible on the plane ride home from Manhattan last year. You know, Cade Brewer talking about the ride he's gone down. Jacoby Jones, Craig, telling a really good story to us last week and kind of going down the road saying basically, hey, you know, guys that come from my hometown of Shreveport, where he grew up in Shreveport, guys don't make it out. And not only did he make it out, but he's leaving the University of Texas with a degree, and talked about, you know, when he found out that his foot injury was probably going to keep him out for the year, talked about how Sark just encouraged him, like, hey, stay locked into your books. You know, whatever happens on the field, just make sure you're keeping up with things in the classroom. And he's going to graduate in December. Those kinds of stories, it humanizes guys. And it really, even though things, obviously, look, I've talked about this season as it's in the conversation with one of the worst seasons this program has had in the modern era. That said, it humanizes guys and makes you realize, like, these guys are people too. And yeah, expectations fell short on the field. It wasn't what anybody wanted. It's not the standard of this program. But at the same time, it makes you feel good for guys like that, that at least that one last time, they got to know what that feeling was like mm-hmm. winning a ball game.
Yep. Feel good for them.
And the way they did it too, just with, you know, necessity is the mother of all invention. And Sark talked about it. Look, coming home from Morgantown, Hudson Carr dealing with a high ankle sprain, and we'd reported to Hornets 24/7 earlier in the week that it was looking like he probably wasn't going to play. And Casey Thompson, who, you know, everybody's talking about, do you accept a bowl bid? I'm like, well, you can talk about accepting a bowl bid, but your one healthy quarterback is talking about, hey, he's looking forward to not having a grip or throw a football for 4 weeks so his thumb can heal. Mm-hmm. And he decided, hey, you're going to have to invest some time in a Wildcat. You have to get creative. And honestly, Craig, there was a point in that game where it really wasn't the Wildcat. It was, you're basically running like single wing football. You're basically just snapping it to the tailback and getting an extra hat in the run game and seeing what you can get.
That's what Roshan talked about as well, and Cade Brewer talked about as well, by having the extra hat in the run game.
Yeah, and so, but you think about just the way Roshan did it. Like, none of his runs were longer than 24 yards, and the 24 yarder he had was at the end of the game where they were closing things out. 11 of his 31 carries, Craig, went for 2 or fewer yards. So everything he got on the ground, he earned every bit of the 179 that he gained on 31 carries with the touchdown. So that, and then for the defense to pitch a shutout in the second half, and, you know, this defense has played good for stretches. And I think if there's one thing you can spin forward from this, it's not the numbers or the anything like that. It's the fact that the 71-yard Will Howard touchdown run,
mm-hmm.
that after that play and in the aftermath of that play, it's the first time Sark has admitted that he didn't like the effort he saw. And they pulled some guys.
Said it in the press conference, told it to us on the post games that I was not happy with the effort of some of those guys.
And they pulled some guys.
Yeah.
And decided, hey, look, if we're going to go down, I'm at least going to go down with guys that are going to give a maximum effort.
Yep.
And that's what they did. And maybe that's the point when we talk about a culture change and you talk about, you know, establishing just a new way of thinking and turning the page, that could be a really big first step. So don't necessarily look at the numbers or the production or anything like that, but that one twist, that one move by Sark to publicly come out and say, yeah, the effort wasn't good, and there were some guys that got benched because of it. That could be something you look back at if this thing gets turned in the right direction and say, that might have been the start of it, where guys finally realize, yeah, a less than a full effort is just not going to cut it.
Yeah, agreed.
And I think as a coach, you can deal with guys sometimes not making plays, because when you say, well, maybe there's a technique thing you can clean up, or you know, just tell a guy, hey, slow down, just trust your training, whatever. But, man, just guys giving a halfway effort. And, look, you can go watch the tape and see which guys were giving a halfway effort on that play, and it corresponds with guys that you didn't see on the field in the second half. Maybe that's a spot where things can change. We'll continue to unpack the K-State game and the end of the season throughout the week. But I do want to mention the Lincoln Riley stuff. And it's interesting. We were talking about it during the break, and I was trying to think, has a coach at a legitimate blue blood program, like when you think of the blue bloods in college football,
mm-hmm.
your top 5 to 10, 12 programs all time, you know, your USC's, Ohio State's, Michigan, Oklahoma, Ohio State, how whatever order you want to put them in, you know that top group. Has a coach ever left one of those jobs to go to another? And the guys that I've thought about haven't done it, and look, I'm not necessarily saying A&M is a top 12 program all time, but the only two instances that I can think of where that happened, where guys made a lateral move, was Dennis Franchione going from mm-hmm. Alabama to Texas A&M
mm-hmm.
back in late 2002, 2000, into 2003. But even then, that was a different time because Alabama was on probation at that mm-hmm. point, and A&M wasn't. And then Jimbo Fisher going from Florida State, where he had won a national championship, to A&M. But even when Jimbo left, you could already see they were 5-6 at the time, and things were not trending in the right direction.
The seat was getting worn there.
And we've seen guys like, you know, Mack Brown had North Carolina at that point where they were in national title contention, but he takes the Texas job. So we've seen guys go from Power 5 to Power 5, but where it's a clear upgrade in terms of prestige and all that other stuff we talk about.
When Tommy Tuberville, Ole Miss to Auburn.
Yeah. And that one, sorry to Ole Miss and Auburn fans, that doesn't register the way this does. This in my lifetime, Craig, is honestly probably an unprecedented move from that standpoint, which is why it's so wild for me to try to wrap my head around.
Interesting. I don't know how much of it is a lifestyle thing, and I know the jokes would fly now, L.A. versus Norman, you know, whatever. I get that. But I don't know if it's that.
We talk about Norman like you're moving to Tehran or something.
Yeah,
like,
right.
It's not terrible. You know. There are worse places to live than Norman, Oklahoma.
Listen, the greater Oklahoma City metropolitan area has just exploded ever since the Thunder got there.
Yeah.
My friends in Oklahoma told me that changed everything about that city. There in Norman is a suburb of it.
You get an NBA franchise, a lot can happen.
But I don't know how much is there's that. I don't know how much there's he just wanted – I mean, if you look at his coaching background as an assistant, since he wasn't a head coach until he got to Norman, he had some moves along the way. There were different stops for him. And now here's an opportunity for him with one of the hallmark programs, but he's also leaving one of the hallmark programs of college football, and that's what makes it unique.
And the timing of it could not be more terrible for Oklahoma. You're this close to national to the start of the early signing period. You know, we've talked about it. It's not a strong coaching market. Like, this was, boy, you talk about just, I don't know what label you want to put, just like a baller, just put it out on the table, just gutsy move by USC to just say, hey, we're going to swing for the fences. And it just shows you, Craig, and this is where the Texas angle starts coming for me. And by the way, Specs text line 337-3776. Are you saying A&M is a blue blood? Take that however you want. I'm just saying it's Power 5 to Power 5, and A&M's I've called A&M the most underachieving program in college football in my lifetime because with the resources and everything else they've got, they should be winning more, have won more than they have, but take that however you want. But when you look at, you know, the timing of this, it just shows you how in these coaching searches, Craig, like timing is everything, right? Like USC's been kind of in this roller coaster in this post-Pete Carroll era where they're trying to get back to where they feel like they should be. And USC probably should be a top 5 to top 10 program every year. And they went through, they had the Lane Kiffin experiment, which didn't work out. And we know how Sark's tenure ended there. And Clay Helton went from interim coach to, hey, he won a conference championship. I think he won a couple of conference championships as SC's head coach. But ultimately, you know, the timing worked out where – this is what's fascinating to me about the Lincoln Riley thing. Take any of those close calls in the fourth quarter of that game Saturday, especially like that non-DPI call in the end zone.
And there were two DPI, non-DPI calls. One like you said, in the end zone. There's one that was just really looked egregious. The other one, remember, there's no face guarding rule in college football. And a lot of folks say, well, you know, he didn't even turn back. Doesn't have to turn back as long as he's not doing contact, because there's not a face guarding rule in college football. But it's got to be in the judgment of the officials that there wasn't contact
right.
that interfered with the receiver's opportunity to catch the ball. One of them, you can definitely make that argument. The other one,
if one of those calls goes in Oklahoma's favor, and Oklahoma ends up scoring on one of those drives and they win that game, does Lincoln Riley really leave a team that's 11-1, getting ready to play for a conference championship with a very realistic shot to be in the playoff?
Logic would say no, and yet the things that we're reading today saying that this has been in the works for a bit.
I don't know, Craig.
The question, maybe it was in the works, but maybe does he have a change of heart? Given the way it would,
and it's all about timing. Like, you can go read things and people that covered it. Like, I was, following the deal. Like the Nick Saban to Texas stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's all a matter of timing. If that banquet goes different, if that 12-hour period or 24-hour period goes different from Friday to Saturday, maybe Nick Saban's the head coach of Texas on Sunday. I don't know, but. The bottom line is, it just shows you how timing can be so beneficial. Like, timing worked out for Texas perfectly. The end of John Makovic's tenure coincided with Mack Brown in North Carolina reaching its peak. Suddenly Texas needs a head coach, and guess what? There's a guy in Chapel Hill who, his personality, the way he runs a program, reminds a lot of people of Darryl Royal. He can recruit like a mother. Guess what? It just works out perfectly that this guy can come resurrect Texas football. And timing has not worked in Texas' favor. You know, Texas swung for the fences last fall trying to get Urban Meyer. And whether he just didn't want to get back into college coaching, didn't want to deal with the transfer portal and NIL and all the other stuff that was coming down the pike, whether he didn't want to deal with the dynamics at Texas or he just really wanted to try his hand at the NFL, man, the timing just didn't work out. So the timing in this case worked out perfectly for USC. And, you know, I think as far as Texas goes, Craig, I would, as we kind of look at the end of Sark's first season, if I were the Texas brass, if I could give them a piece of advice, and I think they're taking it based on everything that we've heard said publicly, do what USC did and exercise some patience. Like, they didn't panic. There weren't a lot of leaks about this coaching search. I mean, I follow, USCfootball.com does a great job on the 24/7 Sports Network covering this program. I mean, Ryan Abraham and all the insiders over there said, I mean, all our sources say the administration feels like they got their guy, just nobody knows who it is. And it turns out, maybe to your point, maybe it has been in the works for a couple of weeks, because that's been the thought, that USC has had their guy, and it ends up being Lincoln Riley. So just exercise some patience.
Yeah.
Just don't get out over your skis, and maybe things work out. That's kind of a little bit of a Texas layer to it, man. It's just, again,
okay.
Timing is everything. When you're trying to hire a big-time coach, timing is everything.
Yeah. By the way, since we're on the subject of coaching, I read a piece this morning that said, is the shine wearing off on Matt Rhule? Two real ugly losses, one to the Washington football team, and then yesterday getting worked by the Dolphins in Miami. What's the deal? I don't think in Carolina they're thinking that way, but it does kind of make you raise the eyebrows.
I'll tell you what, if Matt Rhule is fired in the next 5 minutes, the line freaking forms to the left
of
college coaches, ADs, and presidents.
Yeah.
Just crawling on broken glass to Charlotte to get an interview with Matt Rhule.
I certainly, if that happened, Oklahoma would be knocking on his door, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Boy, and again, you talk about timing. Like, I don't know.
But see, that's the point about how timing of certain losses fixes things in folks' mind. Yeah. About that. Yeah, it was an ugly loss yesterday. And it was an ugly loss when they lost at Washington, to Washington. But, come on. So...
Yeah, and now when you look at this Oklahoma job, there's a number of different ways they can go, right? Like, not necessarily Matt Rhule, but, mm-hmm. Is this the job that Joe Brady decides to become a college head coach for?
Right.
You know, you can go that route. If you're kind of looking for the next Lincoln Riley, mm-hmm. maybe it's Joe Brady. If you just want a guy that you feel like can prepare you to go into the SEC, boy, if Matt Campbell's ever going to leave Ames, Iowa, maybe taking over Oklahoma with them going to the SEC is the job to get him to leave. Or I'll give you maybe a wild card. I don't think this is going to happen, but I'll give you a wild card. There's a lot of former Bob Stoops players on this staff. Joe John Finley, Calvin Thibodeau, DeMarco Murray. do they stay within the Bob Stoops family?
Or within Bob Stoops, since he's gonna coach him in the bowl game.
I think he's gonna stay retired.
Yeah, I do too.
But do they stay within the family and get a guy like Jay Norvell that understands the dynamics? He's done a good job at Nevada, and just say, hey, just stabilize this thing for a little bit.
Yeah.
He knows that program, loved his time at Oklahoma, and again, has done a really good job as a college head coach. Do they go with a guy like Jay Norvell just to bring some stability to it? Boy, it's been a long time. I was a freshman in high school the last time Oklahoma had a legitimate football coaching search. It's been a long time since they've had to do this.
Yeah, indeed. All right. Coming up, we do have Inconceivable. That's next. We'll continue to get to your texts as well and a lot more. And again, our Whataburger Top 5 coming up next hour when we continue to light the tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9 AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Inconceivable. 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 Inconceivable.
You keep using the word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Jeff was just asking me about this. I don't have this story yet. So the one that Bucky and Aaron had about the pilot, you know, telling air traffic control there was a woman who was breastfeeding a cat on a plane.
Happened on the Delta Airlines
flight. Yeah, yeah. Lots of weird stuff has happened on Delta this year. But we'll try to unearth a few more details on that before just telling the story without having all the... I will tell you this. I got a couple of notes for Snoop. Oh, well, since we're on the animals first. You know who Bart the Bear is?
No.
All right. Bart the Bear, you've seen him in countless. Yep. Countless commercials, TV shows, and movies.
Oh, so he's like a working bear.
Yeah. Famed grizzly bear appeared in countless movies, TV. He was in We Bought a Zoo. He was in Game of Thrones. Yeah. He passed away.
Oh, no.
He was, I think, 22. It says the Vital Ground Foundation co-founded. It says they are forever humbled and grateful to have shared our lives with this noble grizzly.
Is he like Coco the gorilla where he could, like, communicate with people?
Or? Yeah, a lot of that. Featured in many motion pictures, Dr. Dolittle 2, An Unfinished Life, Into the West, Evan Almighty. Have you heard about the Morgans? Without a Paddle, Zookeeper, Pete's Dragon, We Bought a Zoo, Into the Wild, The Grizzly Maze, and Game of Thrones. So they said he died silently and naturally along the banks of Daniel Creek in Utah earlier this week.
Like that dog from Air Bud.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He is survived by his sister, Honey Bump, and many at the foundation who loved him, according to...
Well, that's sad and unfortunate.
Yeah. Yeah. So
among his movie credits, I noticed Grizzly Man was not in there. He didn't have anything to do with Timothy Treadwell's fate.
Nope, did not. This is kind of sad and just kind of troubling as well. Did you hear about the UNLV student that died in a boxing match?
No.
UNLV student has died just days after participating in, wait for it, fraternity boxing match. This was for charity, but he collapsed soon after the fight in what the school described as a tragic accident. Nathan Tyler Valencia, 20 years of age, died on Tuesday, 4 days after participating in Kappa Sigma's fraternity's fight night on November 19th. According to an online flyer for the event, he was one of the fighters participating in the card's main event. The family attorney said that the junior kinesiology man had no boxing experience prior to taking part in an off-campus charity bout.
I'm guessing this was not sanctioned by a local athletic commission, correct?
No, and you know what? I remember these things when I was in North Texas. It was either the Pikes or the Theta Chi's had one, had fight night. I don't even remember who it was, but it might have been the Sig Epps had fight night. There. And so the fraternities
Texas
are doing
State,
this for guys who are
Texas
out there.
Texas State's done this. I don't know if they still do. I don't know what's going on back in my
day. It's dangerous to do that kind of stuff with guys who've never gotten in the ring before and do that sort of thing.
We're getting all liquored up and putting on boxing gloves.
It's not good.
You should do just what me and my roommates did. Just get drunk and shoot shotguns off the back porch of the apartment complex.
There's something safe for you there. Hey, Snoop, I got something for you here now.
Okay.
Because it is Cyber Monday. Are you the owner of a Nintendo Switch? I was trying to remember.
My son is.
Okay. All right. Well, One thing you should know is there are Cyber Monday deals for bundles, cheap games, and more. And that includes Nintendo Switch Mario Kart 8 Deluxe Bundle for $300, regularly about $400.
All right.
So there's that. There's a Nintendo Switch. Is it OLED or OLED bundle?
Oh! I know what you're talking about. I don't know how that's pronounced. I've seen that.
Who's your go-to back in the original Mario Kart on Super Nintendo?
Usually Toad.
Toad. Yeah, Toad. Okay. That's kind of the default for everybody.
It says if you're still hunting down a Switch OLED or OLED, this GameStop bundle might be your best shot. On top of getting the latest and best Switch, you get a PDP LVL40 gaming headset. I have no idea what that is. A gaming case and a copy of the new Pokemon Brilliant Diamond game. We expect this bundle to go in and out of stock, but pricier packages deals typically stay around longer. So they're saying there's something for you there, Snoop.
Okay.
And then, where are you with Xbox stuff?
I'm more of a PlayStation, but
yeah, Snoop's a PlayStation.
I like Xbox.
Okay. Xbox Series S, actually in stock, and includes some free stuff for Cyber Monday.
That looks pretty cool.
I like free 99.
Yeah. $299. This is a $299 Xbox Series S bundle that includes a lot of in-game goodies for Fortnite and Rocket League, making it one of the best Cyber Monday gaming deals they've seen yet. So, just letting you know that you've got some.
You're looking out.
You've got some stuff.
That's cool and all. I'll just keep my old school NES and my Super Nintendo. Play some Tecmo Super Bowl, some Mario Kart.
Yeah,
Tetris.
Just stay old school
Tetris,
with them.
Yes.
Okay, got one more thing for you guys.
And no, not an app guy on the Specs text line. Bart the Bear did not die from diabetes due to honey consumption.
No,
don't it believe said, that was in the
said
report.
He died naturally. Beaver Lance Jason says, you got any uplifting humorous stories for our money? Well, one was that. Here's what you're looking for, Jason. U.S. Customs and Border Protection officials have been busy. They've been real busy in the nation's capital of late. There's been a lot of stuff, contraband, a lot of stuff coming in to Washington, D.C.A., Washington National, Reagan. It's called Reagan National mm-hmm. Airport. Also, BWI, that's Baltimore, Washington International. You've flown into BWI before.
I did for the Maryland game a few years ago.
Okay. Speaking of uplifting, right? Okay. So then.
Sorry, Longhorn fans.
The latest. So listen to this, Jason. The latest is at Dulles International Airport, just out west of.